This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Welcome to today's ILTA podcast entitled How to Deal with ROI Conversations when Vetting Legal Technology. My name is Holly Hanna, and I'm your moderator today. I'm the KM Firm Solutions Manager at Perkins Coie. I am thrilled to be joined by our speakers, Jennifer Saylor, National Director of Innovation and Knowledge Programs at Galling WLG, and Giles Thompson, who is the Head of Growth at Avoca. Welcome, Jennifer and Giles.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So one of the questions that I think of a lot when I think about ROI and legal technology is how I come up with a qualifiable number when what I'm really doing is working with a fundamentally qualitative process. Jennifer, do you have any thoughts on that?
First of all, it really depends on the software, because what you're looking at in terms of measuring ROI is going to be different for each kind of software. And some of the software will have ROI where quantifiable, numbers are easy to point out. There's other technologies where that's not going to be the case. So for example, passive time capture tools, document assembly, proofreading, that kind of stuff, you can quantify that easily by showing, the amount of time they're capturing or the amount of time you're saving. But if you're looking at software that helps you improve your quality, or mental well-being, that's a little harder to quantify, but not impossible. So it really does depend. But for me, the bottom line is you're always, always going to be looking at adoption and usage, because if you don't have those, you've got no ROI, no matter what the technology.
And Giles, do you have anything to add to that?
In terms of how you come up with the quantifiable number, I think it's quite important to look at what the tools that you're looking at for a particular use case actually track. It's no good coming up with a figure if you're not going to be provided that data by the tool that you're actually using. So starting with the different metrics that are available and that you're going to be sent is really important. I operate in the document automation space. For document automation, as Jennifer alluded to, it's quite simple. You look at the time for a manual draft, you minus off, the time for an automated draft, and then you times that by the number of, contracts a month that you're executing. Some people take a bit more of a sophisticated approach where they minus off the time sort of spent configuring the documents with automation. And it's also important, a lot of people also look at the cost of the drafter as well, whether that be an automator or the person who, the lawyer who may be drafting the document. Also look at the license fees that are charged, and also, look at potentially additional revenue. So a notional figure of the sort of potential additional revenue that could be generated by time savings. But what I would say is it's worth doing modeling, but that, it's important to remember that it's dynamic. It needs to be updated over time as the sort of cost inputs change, but it's also not, going to be precisely accurate. And it's also important to think about, your broader goals as an organization, because as alluded to by Ginevra, some benefits, even ones that are sort of indirectly financial benefits, a bit less tangible.
Well, and that's kind of interesting, because when you think about that, I start thinking about who should be deciding what our metric of success is. Is it finance? Because they're really obviously focused on billable hours. Is it the KM professionals, where we're concerned with attorney adoption and satisfaction? How do we align these different goals so that everybody's getting what they're looking for? Giles, what do you think about that?
I think it's really hard. I think one thing to remember about both in-house teams and law firms is there's no one person who is effectively buying the tool. So within law firms, we will sometimes sell to partners within a particular division of a law firm, and it will come out of their budget. We might sell to a sort of central procurement function or the innovation function. So it's a bit of a frank answer, but from my perspective, the people who are paying are the people that should decide the metric that we care about. And, to that end, that they should also be looking at, at all the stakeholders that, that particular decision affects as well, and also looking to the future too. So whilst we might be initially adopted, for example, for a real estate finance use case within a law firm, what they look at and what they measure and the information they provide to us, and ultimately, those calculations that get over time, that will impact others, and also if they've looked at the data inputs that they can get from their provider, those will be the same data inputs that other people, should that tool expand through the firm, will have access to and will be able to use for their own ROI calculations too.
And Ginevra, what do you think? How would you go about meeting all those needs from the different stakeholders?
Well, actually, I want to go back to who the decider is, because it's not really a question of who should be the decider. It's in practical terms, who is. And if you think about it, the person who's building the business case is usually the person who starts talking about ROI initially. And so that person has a great opportunity, person who's bringing in the technology, to set the stage for what the metrics for ROI are going to be. And if you make a compelling business case and you focus the firm on the proper metrics for measuring that particular piece of technology during this early phase of the decision to buy, that will stick. And so that's how ROI will be measured then later on and going forward, and how you'll measure success. So I think it's very important that the person who's bringing in the technology really spend a lot of time when developing the business case to lay out what those metrics are going to be. I think aligning with all the stakeholders then, to bring it back to the second part of your question, that needs to be part of the decision of what the proper metrics are. You can't just look at how is it going to affect one segment of your firm population. You have to consider all the potential stakeholders in deciding what metrics you're going to track.
Ginevra, that's a really interesting point, and it makes me wonder how we involve our attorneys, especially our associates, to get a quantifiable ROI number. Is there a way that we can get it programmatically, like from billing metadata, or do we have to kind of involve them in a more active sort of form?
Yeah, that's very interesting. And here's my approach. In terms of programmatically, we've got all the data. All of that data is sitting there, it's being collected in spite of ourselves. And what we need to do is just look at it. But I don't think it's incumbent upon the associates or the attorneys to do that. That is really the role for business services people, to look at that rich data and start to use it to quantify ROI. It's all there for us to use. So what I like to do in terms of the associates is get some really good anecdotal input from them. And from those stories they tell me about, you know, how this technology has changed their practice, I can then take that and translate that into dollars and cents.
And Giles, how would you go about involving attorneys, or do we need to involve attorneys, or do we just kind of, as Ginevra says, kind of focus on the metadata and on anecdotal information?
I think the answer is it depends what you care about. If you're, you know, in the case of document automation, if you're just looking at a bare time saving that you've made, and then you're going to attribute some, you know, foregone billables, then you probably don't. You probably got the data. What I'd say is if you're going to involve them and you're looking for, you know, metrics around things like increased job satisfaction, and you're going to be surveying lawyers to get quantifiable metrics before and after a project, and you want to find out, you know, what their favorite elements of the role are, how much time they spent drafting, you know, what types of technology they would prioritize, and, you know, how happy they are with certain elements of your estate, then I think it's really important to involve them early and actually action some of their feedback before you implement a piece of technology, because, you know, you're ultimately asking the associates to potentially do you a favor there. And, you know, it's like any, you know, element of life. If you want someone to do you a favor, you probably have to, you know, enfranchise them, you know, and help them before you ask for the particular favor. But there's loads of ways that you can do it just using data. So you can look at, you know, if you're the innovation team within a firm, you can look at the number of inconsistencies in the manual forms that you're looking at when you're in the process of automating them. And then you know that you've got a bare increase there. You can also track things like, you know, the time spent to maintain precedents manually versus in an automated way. You can look at, you know, client retention and acquisition numbers, which the business will have anyway, and also looking at, you know, the types of client work that are being won, and potentially whether there is an increase, for example, in transaction-based fixed fee work, which is mainly driven by automation, which perhaps was not something that was being won by the firm before. So there's lots of different areas you can do it without their help. But if you're interested in more soft financial benefits, such as, you know, satisfaction in the job and mental health, I do think you invariably do have to involve them in some way.
So when, you know, we've kind of talked a lot about ROI and kind of like getting some passive measurements, some active measurements. Are there any other questions that you would ask, Giles, if people are looking at evaluating a new technology investment? And I also kind of wonder, like, how we measure ROI after the product is in place and the attorneys start using it. How often should we go back and look at how our products are being used to see if they're still worthwhile?
Yeah, I think, again, I think it's really important to sort of think about what your actual focus is on in the first instance. You know, do you have, you know, in your ROI, do you have a sort of client focus? So are you looking at delivering, you know, innovation that supports, you know, one or more key clients to sort of improve that relationship through sort of retention and, you know, via innovation? You know, do you care about, you know, expansion? You know, is it, you know, something that you're doing to try and, you know, increase your amount of business you do in a particular transactional area, you know, to drive competitiveness and capability and attract new clients? You know, or is your broad focus going to be on the employees? So looking at where areas where you have sort of high turnover and low, job satisfaction, and, you know, maybe that's your focus. So I think, you know, maybe your initial focus might be a client focus, because that might be the easiest way for you to justify the initial purchase of a product. But maybe then you can add different, you know, facets, and, you know, expansion focus and an employee one as well. And, you know, then hopefully you're hitting on all of those different types of ROI, you know, simultaneously, in addition to some of the maybe more bare financial metrics. And so that's how I might reevaluate it. All of the data points that I've already mentioned are good ones. And I think in terms of questions to ask, the really obvious one that we get asked by a lot of our potential clients at Avoca is, you know, how is your technology currently utilized by people who use the technology? And, you know, what are their perceived benefits that they experience? And, you know, we love having open conversations like that, where we can actually feed into the return on investment calculations, because we know the benefits that we typically see people have, and we want those to be measured.
And Ginevra, what do you think from a law firm perspective? Like, how often do you go back and look at the existing technology and determine whether or not it's still doing what we expect it to be doing?
That's really good. We look back at it continually to make sure that it's still bringing value. And kind of, I have a four-pronged approach. So in terms of the questions, you know, you ask what are good questions to ask and data points to focus on, regardless of the technology that we're evaluating. I think these four things are critical. The first is the speed with which I get from purchase to implementation. And the reason I want to know that is because obviously I'm getting no ROI until it starts being used. Then my second question is the speed to actual usage. Is it a really heavy learning curve? Is there a lot of training? That kind of thing. And the third piece, probably most important, is the adoption rate. Am I going to see good adoption right up front as soon as people are trained? If people aren't using it, there's no ROI, no matter how good the technology is. And then the fourth piece is persistence. So will people continue to use it over time? And, you know, that's a big problem with some technology, where you get trained on it. And if it's not the kind of technology that you're going to be using day after day after day, but only when needed, then there could be a problem with persistence, because people will lose the skill in between when they're not using it. So those are the four things that I look at. And so obviously that persistence piece means you have to constantly be reevaluating and looking at whether the technology is still bringing the value.
Yeah, and I do think that that is absolutely kind of the heart of the matter when you're looking at ROI. So thank you so much for our audience today for tuning into the podcast. And thank you, Ginevra and Giles. You had a fantastic conversation and I learned a lot. Have a wonderful day, everyone.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.